This is Rural Health Leadership Radio.
Episode 24, a conversation with Drs. Kari and McDowell with the University of Illinois College of Medicine at Rockford.
The thing we find most meaningful is the wonderful partnerships that we have in the community, the willingness of the community to participate.
I think certainly in rural communities, but in general, overall in the healthcare environment, we need to change our mindset from a whole treatment model to a prevention model.
Welcome to the Rural Health Leadership Radio with your host, Dr. Bill Oxier. Each week, Dr. Oxier has a conversation with a different rural health leader to discuss what's working and what's not working in rural health, along with other topics of interest to rural health leaders. Rural Health Leadership Radio's goal is to improve health in rural America by providing a simple, no-cost means to share information and connect rural health leaders from around the country. And now, here's Dr. Oxier with today's guest.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Bill Oxier, and welcome to Rural Health Leadership Radio. Today, we're fortunate to have two guests in our presence, Dr. Manu Kari and Dr. Martin McDowell, both from the University of Illinois College of Medicine at Rockford and the Department of Family and Community Medicine. And Martin is also the Associate Director of the National Center for Rural Health Professions. Manorama M. Kari, PhD, is a research assistant professor whose research is focused in the area of obesity and chronic disease risk reduction in rural and underserved populations, women's health, and mHealth. Her research uses community-based behavioral lifestyle change interventions to motivate women and provide them the skills to increase physical activity and improve eating behaviors. Since she has extensive experience with program evaluation, planning and implementation of community-based programs, Dr. Kari also has a doctorate in public health from the University of Illinois at Chicago and a master's of preventative medicine from the Ohio State University. She also has a bachelor's and master's degree in community nutrition from India, where she hails from. Martin McDowell has a doctorate in public health and an MBA and is associate director for education in the National Center for Rural Health Professions and a research professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the University of Illinois, Rockford. He guides the curriculum development, evaluation, and teaching of students in the rural physician and pharmacy programs and is a faculty member in the public health program. His scholarly and consulting interests focus on program evaluation, health services research, and population health epidemiologic research, and he has published over 40 peer-reviewed articles and presented at many national meetings. He was previously a tenured faculty member in the graduate program in health services administration at Xavier University in Cincinnati before coming to the University of Illinois. At Xavier, he guided students in conducting a variety of community and neighborhood needs assessments as part of a managerial epidemiology course that he taught. He was also the university representative to the Greater Cincinnati Health Improvement Collaborative, and he is a graduate of Davidson College and began his career at East Carolina University. I'm honored to have both of you as guests today. Welcome, Dr. Kari, and welcome, Dr. McDowell.
Thank you for having us.
All right, so I've got a lot of questions for you, and we're going to get right to it. Manu, what is your definition of leadership?
So my role in rural communities is usually as that of a researcher and to work with community engagement. So I look at leadership as working with the community to help them identify priorities and guiding them to develop and implement programs that would improve overall health in these communities.
Thank you, Manu. So Martin, same question. What's your definition of leadership?
Well, I have a simple definition of leadership. And basically, I view it as to guide and inspire the right actions for the right reasons.
Excellent. Thank you.
Basic definition.
I like those simple definitions. Thank you. So I'll ask each of you this question. And Manu, why don't you go first? But why did you choose healthcare as an occupation?
So as when you introduced me, you said, I come from India. I grew up in Mumbai, which is one of the biggest cities in India and in the world, if you want to say that.
But yes, that's the opposite of rural.
Yes, it is the opposite of rural. But I grew up working in the urban slums with underserved and poor populations and in the rural villages around Mumbai. Some of my early work was with USAID and with UNICEF doing community assessments in the villages. And so I saw very early the impact of community-based work on population health. Mm-hmm. And that's what drew me to working in public health pretty much from the age of 18, I would say.
Thank you for sharing that. How about you, Martin?
Well, I my father was a pastor, so I was encouraged to do good in the world, and improving health seemed to be right down the alley of the right thing to do for that. So I've been involved in improving health of populations for many years.
Were you considered as a PK? Do you know what a PK means?
Yes, I do. I know very well. I was told many times to set a good example for the other children in the church.
We share that in common, Martin. We're both PKs. For those of you who don't know what a PK is, that means preacher's kid. So.
Oh, okay.
So why rural health? Manu, you grew up in Mumbai. Like you said, it's one of the largest cities in the world. Why are you focused on rural health specifically?
I mean, for as long as I could remember, every summer I spent in a small village in the southern part of India where my grandparents lived. So we would leave the day after school closed and come the day before school opened again. So my whole summer break was spent in a small village where my grandfather was the local district judge, but owned a lot of land and basically grew mango and rice crops. So I'm very familiar with rural. And so I had the luxury of seeing both sides, the two sides of rural and urban. And that's how when I go back into the small rural towns in northern Illinois and southern Illinois, it takes me back home. It really does. It takes me back to my summer vacations.
Thank you. How about you, Martin? Why rural health?
Well, I grew up my early years in a rural congregation outside Gastonia, North Carolina, where my father was a pastor. And I recall many visits to church members on Sundays who had farms, chicken farms and other kinds of farms. And then we moved to some other small towns in North Carolina, as pastors do. They move occasionally north of Raleigh to Oxford. And then I taught school in Oxford for a year and then went down to Eastern North Carolina to go to graduate school after Davidson and worked as a health educator in a county health department in Greenville and that county before it became a metropolitan area of North Carolina in the late 70s. So my early experiences were all about rural issues.
So rural takes both of you back to your childhood, and it's an easy population to serve, it sounds like. So, Manu, can you provide us with an overview of the Win with Wellness program that the two of you have spearheaded?
Yeah, so Win with Wellness is a multi-component, collaborative, community-based initiative to address obesity and chronic disease risks in two northern Illinois counties, Stevenson and Carroll. They're the upper northwest corner of Illinois, and they're two contiguous counties with populations. Carroll County has a population of about close to 15,000, and Stevenson is a slightly larger county with a population of about 47,000. What Win with Wellness aims at doing is bringing partners from multiple sectors to the table to address health needs in these communities. And so we have four partners to begin with when we receive, and it's funded by the Health Resources Services Administration, Federal Office of Rural Health Policy. And when we obtained this grant, we had four partners at the table. The two county health departments, Freeport Health Network, which is the largest healthcare provider in the region, and the University of Illinois College of Medicine. So there, you know, we have a for-profit hospital, we have two health departments, and then we have the university. So there's three sectors coming together to address health issues. Mm-hmm. And another component of this program is once we got the grant, we went back to the community and we did 6 focus groups and 15 stakeholder interviews in these two communities to get from the community, from their perspective, what did they think the needs are? so that we were not going in and saying, guess what, you have an obesity problem, you have a chronic disease problem, let us tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. And we actually ask them, what would you like to see? What are your needs? What would be easy for you to do and engage in? And so we built this multi-level program. The first level is an evidence-based group intervention called TOPS, where adult men and women get together to talk about lifestyle change with the goal of weight loss. We currently have 16 groups running in the two counties, and they're located either in community settings like, you know, community centers or a girls and boys club, a recreation center, or in smaller, medium-sized work sites. The next level of the intervention, or the next component, is community presentations that are done by health educators, again, focused on physical activity and healthy eating. But the sessions are about 15 to 20 minutes long, and people who attend this session come out with a practical way of changing either physical activity or healthy eating, small changes that they can make that can impact their life. So, for example, if it was a physical activity session, they'll be told, well, you're watching TV. Guess what? During the advert, when the ads come on, get up and do some jumping jacks. These are simple things, right? They don't need equipment. It's easy enough to do. I'm sure everybody watches TV all the time. So they're practical suggestions. Okay. And finally, what we did is just launched a broad-based media campaign in the two counties. We have billboards up in both counties. We've been doing a series of radio interviews that are airing on the radio, local radio stations, where all of our partners have been talking about the successes of the program and their perspectives on the impact of this program. We have print materials that we are putting out through our healthcare provider offices, almost as a referral mechanism. We have a Facebook page that's extremely active. And then we have a 1-800 number that people can call into if they want to be engaged in this program. So in a quick 2-minute description, that's in a nutshell what Win with Wellness is.
Yes, there's a lot of moving parts to that. You know, one question back to the survey that you did initially, were the results that you received from the different focus groups, were they what you expected or were they different than what you expected?
So I have done similar programming in Southern Illinois, in the Southern seven counties of Illinois, which is also a very rural area. And so, yes, they were similar, but they were different. One of the things that stood out to us from the focus groups and the interviews is everybody seemed to get the whole concept of, yes, eating behavior and physical activity is really important to improving chronic disease status and improving obesity, but they did not know how to take the next step. So how do I improve my eating behavior, or what does it mean to improve my physical activity, right? Often physical activity is associated with, oh, I need to go to a gym, or I need to have all this expensive equipment, or I need to get a membership at the Y. But, you know, I think the knowledge about how to do this is what was the biggest gap in all of these communities. So we did go back and incorporate into all of our programming this concept of easy, small, practical things people can do to improve behavior that can be sustained, right? It's not sustainable to say, okay, you know what, you're going to eat a 1,000-calorie diet starting today for the rest of your life. Right. It's not going to happen. Right. But, you know, if I say, well, you know what, instead of eating 12 ounces of meat in your meal, we actually gave out to our participants what is called a plate that has partitions that shows what the serving size for meat is, what is the serving size of vegetables, what is the serving size for whatever the starch or the carbohydrate you're having in a meal, which actually visually tells the person, oh my God, I'm eating so much more than I need to eat.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, so it's things like that kind of stick in people's minds. And then with the TOPS groups, their groups, the smallest group we have, I think, is 6 people, and the largest group is 19 people. The groups meet week after week, and so they become a support system for each other. They encourage each other when they're down. They celebrate small successes, and that becomes, so there is a component of this that takes a life of its own. It's organic. And our hope is that when the grant is over, people will continue with this behavior and continue to meet.
Thank you with that information. And this is probably for you as well, Manu. What is it that is unique about the Win with Wellness project?
Well, I there are other projects in the United States, similar to ours. I would say, like other programs, we try to follow an evidence-based approach to implementing such community interventions. And this is an intervention to encourage health and wellness. And the thing we find most meaningful is the, you know, the wonderful partnerships that we have in the community, the willingness of the community to participate. I mean, people are concerned, as Dr. Curry mentioned, about their health, and they appreciate the opportunity to learn more. Mm-hmm. The staff at the health department and the hospital has been wonderful. We even have a private media group in the town that's involved in doing the billboards and so forth. And so I just think it's in typical rural fashion, it's a great group of people working together to try to improve the overall health of the community. Mm-hmm. I mean, that two competitor hospital, rural hospital systems come to the table together around this issue of improving community wellness. I mean, they're both nonprofit systems, and they both are willing to set aside the business competition for the sake of the good of the improving the health of the community. And their providers are going to be involved in helping publicize information about the weight loss groups. When we talk with the providers in these health systems, they said, well, I'd love to do that. I just don't have time and staff in my office. But if you will give me materials, I will endorse that. Mm-hmm. I know some of your previous guests on your podcast have mentioned the importance of physician endorsement and in getting a patient to move forward and taking action. And so we know that's true. And so they're going to be involved in helping encourage patients to go to the TOPS groups and take advantage of the program that will help them with their weight. It's a very well-established evidence-based program that if you participate and engage with it, will help you, you know, in losing weight.
Thank you. So,
can I just add something to that, Dr. Oxier?
Yes.
So Dr. McDowell mentioned partnerships, and we started, like I mentioned earlier, with four partners. In a matter of a year, we were able to bring two other significant partners to the table. So now we have the United Way of Northwest Illinois as a partner at the table. And then we have Monroe Clinic, which is another not-for-profit healthcare provider that provides services in Illinois and Wisconsin. Stevenson County borders Wisconsin, so they have clinics in both places. And so as Dr. McDowell mentioned, you know, just bringing all these diverse partners to the table to talk to each other to address a common issue in itself is a huge success and a unique feature of this program. The other unique feature is that the partners are now engaged with the community, and we are doing community engaged work. So it's, you know, there is a give and take between the two sides, and we are actively, consciously try to listen to what the community is saying and trying to circle back and say, okay, how can we address this?
Well, that's great. And you may have already answered this question, because the next question I had is, what is important about the community partners involved with the Win with Wellness project? Is there more you want to add to that?
No, I think we just said it all.
All right. Yeah. So the health benefits of this program seem obvious. Martin, can you talk to us about the economic impact of the Win with Wellness program?
Well, I'm going to use American Public Health Association fact sheet to kind of give some information about the importance of this topic in America. And it's true all over the country. Every nook and cranny of America has issues around the cost of chronic disease. So the five most costly chronic conditions in the United States cost nearly $347 billion, which is 30% of healthcare spending in 2010. And that is a high cost. It, you know, contributes in many ways to economic impact. And these kinds of wellness programs, if you've done right and using systematic approach, can really make a difference. For example, for every dollar invested in improving wellness activities such as physical activity, nutrition, and reducing tobacco use, you can save $5.60 in healthcare spending within 5 years. And the other part of this population that, of course, we mentioned is the workplace setting. And for every dollar spent on wellness workplace programs, you can decrease your medical costs by $3.20 on average and increase productivity, reducing absenteeism by about $2.37. So there is, you know, a payback, if you will, for spending money on wellness programs. Particularly if you're a self-insured employer, you can see this flows immediately to the bottom line if you have employees who are not having to use expensive treatment and also are showing up for work and feeling better and being more productive. It can be a great benefit for the business community as well as just generally for the health of the community population.
Excellent. That's some very interesting numbers that you're throwing out there about the return on investment from investing in a program like this. So whoever wants to answer this question, I leave it to you. What has been the biggest good surprise while implementing this program?
When we were in the early planning stages of this program, after we received the money, our biggest concern was, are we going to be able to get enough people to participate? And that, to me, I mean, having done programs like this before, it was a pleasant surprise. I think it speaks to the lack of resources in rural communities. They don't have access to programming like this. And so there was clearly, people were excited, they wanted to be engaged. And at some point, we actually had to kind of hold back some of the top groups and say, wait, hold on, we can't manage so many groups at one time. Wow. We need to slow down the pace a little bit. Wow. So I think that has been really a great, we are really excited about how much interest there is in the community. I think in terms of a challenge, though, it's now to make sure that it sustains over time, right? Mm-hmm. People are excited when they start, they engage. So we actually started 19 groups. Starting in October of 2015 was when we started our first group. Okay. And we've had three groups shut down. But the three groups that shut down are all three are worksite groups. And it was primarily related to the nature of the job that all of the participants held. They were either, you know, hospital people. And so they were working on uncertain timelines because if they had a patient that they need to take care of, they have to take care of the patient. They can't show up for a group. And so finding a common time for the group to meet was the biggest reason why these groups shut down. One of the other groups was in a police station, and it was a similar thing. Crime investigators, cops are not necessarily on a schedule. Yes. And so that was the challenge that we faced.
Okay. I think another thing I would add that was a pleasant surprise was the, you know, we are a university, and you often hear that the university and community don't, you know, always on the same page or work on the same thought pattern. But, you know, I'd known the people involved with this. We initially approached Dr. Michael Perry, who's the CEO of the hospital there in Freeport. In fact, he was actually born in that hospital, he'll tell you. Wow. And he's been there for many years, first as a physician, and now he's a CEO. And Craig, who's the health director, who's actually health director in both counties, he's hired to be the administrator for both of the counties in the project area. And so we didn't quite know whether they would be receptive to working across organizational boundaries. We know they've done some things at the health department and the hospital together over the years, but we didn't know if they would go as far as to put in a grant with us. I mean, we're our role in this grant is evaluators and kind of coaches, and they are the lead partners. Health department actually is the fiduciary agent that receives the funds from HRSA and then distributes them to the partners that are involved in different aspects, such as the media organization and so forth. So I think just people coming together and realizing that times have changed. I mean, we've moved away from a fee-for-service environment in America fairly quickly, and people are I was happy to see, I mean, I've been teaching population health, you know, for many years, first to health educators and public health, and then to future hospital administrators, and now to medical students. And I was just happy to see the receptivity to the idea of working together around a community wellness project, despite the different priorities people may have. They came together around this issue.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Martin, and thank you, Manuv, for sharing this information. We're going to take a short break right now to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back to continue our conversation with today's guest, Drs. Manu Kari and Martin McDowell with the University of Illinois College of Medicine at Rockford. Leadership makes the difference with financial success, clinical success, and delivering value. Leadership effectiveness drives profits and value. Engaged leaders listen to patients, employees, providers, and community members. Engaged leadership drives results. The Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health assists rural health leaders achieve greatness through individualized coaching and group coaching. A new coaching program just developed by the Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health is the 5 Steps to Maximize Leadership Effectiveness for Greater Profitability and Value. We're inviting 3 critical access hospitals to beta test this program. If you would like to be one of these hospitals, call or email us today. This is a limited opportunity, so call 813-658-0422 or send an email to bill@billoxier.com today. Be the leader you want to be. Call or email today to capture this valuable opportunity for maximized leadership effectiveness for greater profitability and greater value.
We're having a very interesting conversation today with our guests, Dr. Manu Kari and Dr. Martin McDowell with the University of Illinois College of Medicine at Rockford, the Department of Family and Community Medicine. And Martin's also the Associate Director of the National Center for Rural Health Professions. So right before the break, we were talking about some of the good surprises while implementing the Win with Wellness program in Carroll and Stevenson counties in northwestern Illinois. What has been the biggest disappointment implementing this program, the Win with Wellness program?
Well, I guess we all like to have instant, immediate effects. And, you know, as we know, it takes time and patience to really make a dent in, I mean, this is a population of around 50,000 people in 2 counties. And you like to have things move quickly, but you have to step back and be patient. So I wish we could have impacted more people. And, you know, it's the uncertainty of knowing whether you've encouraged people to take some steps. You sometimes wonder, you know, whether anything's happened yet. You wish you had instant results, I guess. So I've been doing this for many years, and it is a challenge to feel the success because you're dealing with something that, as we know, are often well-established habits that people have.
Yes.
And people's cultural expectations. I mean, some of the people who we interviewed initially said, well, I'd like to do something about my nutrition, my exercise, but the rest of my family would fuss at me because they wouldn't like the food I was serving them. So, you know, that is the kind of challenge you deal with. It's one person at a time, and then it's one family at a time, and then it's like, you know, it's one neighborhood at a time where people say, well, I saw them out walking last night. You know, this is, maybe I should get out and walk. And you begin to get this culture of health going where people think about the importance of their behavior in relation to what happens. You know, we, for a long time in the U.S., we sort of left that to the medical community. And now a lot of evidence shows that what you do yourself has a big impact on your health. The people in Madison have actually put together a systematic calculation about this, the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. And they point out that about, in general, health status of a population, about 20% of that's due to clinical care. 30% is due to health behaviors of people in the population. And then social and economic factors are another 40%. Obviously, if you don't have money for food or shelter, that can impact your health. That's a social economic fact. And then the physical environment, as we know from Flint, Michigan, the physical environment in terms of quality of the water is just an example of how. And so people, I think, are starting to realize that with 30% of your health status driven by health behaviors, you have a responsibility to partner with your medical provider to think about what your risks are, get screening, get immunizations, and get early treatment for problems instead of just trying to ignore them and let them get worse.
Manu, I've got a question for you. Not necessarily related to the specific to the Win with Wellness program, but for a community-based initiative in general. What do you think
are the key factors to success of a community-based initiative in a rural community?
So, and I think we've said this in different ways several times already, but I think bringing people to the table from multiple sectors in the community to work together on the issue, I think is really one of the key things, because that's how you build credibility in the community. That's how you get acceptability. And for us, like Martin mentioned, we are a university academic institution. We sit outside of these two counties. And so it was critical for our success to have local leaders, local organizations spearheading the whole effort. So I think that's one big factor. The other big factor is not walking into a community with preconceived notions about what they need or what they have to do, but listen. Not talk, but just listen and see what they need. Get from them their perspectives and then figure out how to address them. So I think I would say if I had to list two primary things, those would be it. And then from my research perspective and from my evaluator hat, I think it's important for both participants, stakeholders, funders, to be able to see evidence of success. So I could be doing all these great things, and anecdotal stories are great, but they're not evidence of success. And so I think nothing gets the message home better than saying, you know what, X percent of your population has gotten off blood pressure medication, or X percent has lost this much of weight. That's a metric people can understand. That's a metric that people see as, oh, you know, this really does have an impact. And so I think that's another key piece of it.
Absolutely.
Another thing about, success in rural communities is bringing the right people to the table. You know, one of the wonderful things about rural communities is you can actually know who in a given community is involved with what issue. I mean, people know, they may see them in various venues and so forth. And because people know each other and they know they're probably going to stay. And so it changes the dynamic of like doing something about an issue, because you bring the people together, they know each other, and someone takes a leadership role and says, well, let's work on this together. And there's a willingness to listen to people that you don't always find in urban settings. People want to charge ahead with what they think would be the idea. And people in rural areas, I think, often realize that you need to listen to the other person, get their ideas if you're going to have a successful long-term initiative. I mean, we've had near perfect attendance at our partner meetings. Despite busy schedules, people have made it a priority from all the different partners we have to be there and talk and work through issues. And I just think it's one of the great things I like about working in rural communities is you can feel like you're making progress because you can bring the right people to the room and you can hopefully see the program in action and measure it, and it doesn't get lost in all the busyness that you sometimes have in urban areas.
Yes. Manu, in the beginning, you were talking about the federal funding that was used to put this program together. What do you see as the role of federal funding agencies for improving health in rural communities?
So I think lack of resources is like a common theme that you hear when you work with rural communities. You know, we don't have the money to do this, or we don't have the resources to do this. I think the advantage of federal agencies like the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy or HRSA giving out money specifically targeted towards rural health and rural health needs at least provides that initial money. So, you know, having a HRSA grant in two counties increases the awareness. There is an awareness now, oh, there is this grant and, you know, it's addressing obesity and chronic disease. And so even if that's the only thing the grant accomplished is made people more aware about the risks of obesity and chronic disease, we are still better off than we were before we got the money. So I think it kind of opens the door for other things to happen. And the power, I think, in rural communities is, like Martin just mentioned, if we bring the right people to the table, when the federal funding is gone, we have the capacity between the partners to say, okay, this was a great program. How can we keep this going? What resources can we bring to bear to continue the parts of the program that people really like, that people want to see continue. So I think the role of the federal agencies is at least to give that startup money, to give, and they provide so many resources. They provide technical resources. You know, we have people to reach out to saying, oh, we've hit this block. You know, how do we address this? How do we think about sustainability, for example? It's not something that intuitively people think about, even academicians think about when they're planning programs, or, you know, and certainly not agencies in small rural communities. They're not thinking about sustainability. They're thinking about, we got this money for now. We can sustain two additional employees within our agency using this grant money. And we'll, yes, we'll do all the activities, but they're not thinking about what after. Mm-hmm. So I think there's, yeah, so it's really important, according to me. Yeah.
On the flip side of that, I would mention that, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And if you're running a rural ACO where you hope to have some shared savings, if you just got people to the table for the sake of doing the right thing and trying to improve health, you could do this for really very little money. People would have to pay for being in the TOPS groups. But you can put together a similar program with maybe some donated media, some people from your various organizations doing talks about different health topics. And the TOPS organization is a national organization that has chapters throughout our state. And they were really very helpful and supportive of helping us get the TOPS groups going, you know, at no charge. They're very interested in expanding TOPS as an organization to help people with this issue of losing weight and the peer support that a lot of people find helpful. So there is a do-it-yourself model with maybe a little bit of local funding that could do this without federal funding if people would want to organize themselves.
Well, that leads me to my next question, Martin. I'll address this to you. What do rural health leaders need to be doing differently to impact community health and wellness? Or another way of saying this would be, perhaps, what advice would you have for others seeking to improve the health in their rural community?
Well, you know, times have changed. We've moved away from, you know, I think the role, I mean, we all have always trained health administrators to be involved in the community where they're a part of the executive team. And especially nowadays, I think that involvement with the community is important in taking a multi-sector look at what needs to be done to improve health in the community. We're in the healthcare business, and certainly that's critical. That's always vital to have quality health services, accessible health services to reach the triple aim of healthcare. But we need to, as we move into this value-based healthcare reimbursement, you might even form a health improvement group in your community, bringing together the park district, the extension people, the healthcare organizations, the county health department, and anyone else who has an interest in improving the overall health of the community, and have races or have walks or whatever the group decides they'd like to do to just create a general awareness that health is in part due to your own choices as an individual, and that we as a community are here to try to encourage and support that and hope that things can move forward. I mean, there's, as I pointed out, there's considerable evidence that wellness initiatives can reduce costs, but then there's the impact on the individual. I mean, we'd all like to live forever, I guess, but we know that's not going to happen. But you'd like to live as healthy as you can, as long as you can. Right. And certainly good nutrition and not smoking and being active all are helpful. I mean, there is genetics, but certainly those kinds of wellness behaviors are helpful to leading to good health status and, you know, being around with your family and being in good health and enjoying life and having a healthy community where people feel engaged and enjoy the resources that they have there in each rural community.
Anything you would like to add to that, Manu?
No, I think Martin's pretty much covered it.
Okay. So I have a question I'm going to ask each of you. Martin, I'll let you go first. You observe rural health, you measure rural health, you participate in rural health. What scares you the most about the future of rural health?
Well, as you can tell from what I've said, I worry that people will not adapt to the changing incentives. I think it's critical that people really think about what the incentives are coming at us from CMS and from private insurance companies and figure out a way to, I have many hats. I've got a public administration, a business degree, and a public health degree, kind of an odd mix. But from all those points of view, on a policy level, you want to have enduring, successful rural communities. And a big part of that is to have the healthcare system continue to be there to serve people. And so I worry that people will not think there's a need to worry about that until it gets to be more of a crisis financially and otherwise. And there's a need, as many of your previous guests have said, the paradigm and the framework is changing from a medical model to a health model. And you really need to think about what that means for your organization and how you're going to do things in your organization and in your community to adapt and move forward and be successful.
Thank you. Manu, what scares you the most about the future of rural?
So, to add to what Martin just said, I think certainly in rural communities, but in general, overall, in the healthcare environment, we need to change our mindset from a whole treatment model to a prevention model. I think as providers, we tend to think about how can we solve this problem once the person has it, right? So to back up from that and say, okay, how can we prevent this person coming in at a point where we are doing aggressive treatment, and how can we prevent it from getting to this point? So I think that's one key thing. The other thing that does concern me is there's been a lot of data released recently in the past few months that actually shows that mortality rates and health indicators in rural communities are really trending in the wrong direction. So while mortality rates in urban communities have been showing a decline, in rural communities, they're actually going up. And so I think there's a need for that awareness to come in and say, okay, something is not working right in rural communities, and what do we need to do to address that? And I think that's the thing that I have is in my mindset right now.
Yes, thank you. So Manu, what excites you the most about the future of rural health?
I think there's so much potential. I just love working in rural communities. I think there's a feeling of working towards the collective good that you see in small rural communities that you might not always see in urban communities. And so I think there is a power in that to improve the health of the community. And so I think that's what makes me keep going back into rural communities to do work.
Excellent. Thank you. And Martin, what excites you the most about the future of rural health?
Well, from a point of view of the university, I think we just enjoy the opportunity to make a contribution and feel like all the things we teach our students and have studied about can be implemented. I'm kind of a practical person. I like to do things that have an effect you can feel like is making a difference. And I'm also pretty much a data person. And I think what excites me is that we actually have some data systems in place where people can use their EMR information, their hospital discharge information, and take a data-driven approach to why are there health problems in the community and look at the etiology of the major reasons for why people are having health problems and then systematically think about what could be done. There's usually, when you look at the data for a community, you oftentimes find that if you go down to the zip code level, that a lot of the health problems are in certain areas where if you would think systematically and work with the community, a difference could be made in improving people's health and they could be contributing more to the community. And so I just think that opportunity to put together the technology we have to look at information with what we know about engaging in communities is something that we all enjoy doing.
Thank you. Thank you, Martin. And thank you, Manu. We've covered a lot of territory in the short time we've been talking to each other this afternoon. If our listeners only take away one thing from this conversation, Martin, what should that be?
Well, just look at your, everybody has to do a community health needs assessment and helps in the hospital side of things as a nonprofit. I mean, look at that. And I'm sure I've looked at many of those reports. take that information and find the right partners in the community who share interest. It's surprising when you get people in a room and say, this is a concern to me. Oftentimes people will speak up and say, well, we've been thinking about that too. And other people join in. And before you know it, you've got a consensus that this is something we'd all like to work on together for the betterment of the community. And sometimes it can be some unusual partners. I mean, you bring in the county police and sheriff and say, you know, people were concerned about safety and exercising. And they might say, well, we'd be happy to, you know, have some of our officers come exercise with them because they need to get some exercise. I mean, you know, you can have some creative thoughts if you get the right people in the room around how to do something that is maybe hasn't been done in the past. Think a little bit out of the box about what can be done and be patient and realize that this, all these things to move the indicators and solve these, some of well-entrenched problems, it's going to take a while and just take the long view.
Thank you, Martin. And Manu, how would you answer that? If our listeners only take away one thing from this conversation, what should it be?
I think similar to what Martin said, I think that I'd like all rural communities and representatives and communities who might listen to this interview to think about ways to do community programming that can benefit overall health. Instead of thinking in a treatment model, think in a prevention model and say, what kind of programming can we bring in? Who are the unique, different partners we can bring to the table that can help us address health in a different way? So kind of think out of the box is what I would say.
Thank you so much. And thank you again, Manu. Thank you, Martin, for joining us today and sharing what you're doing in Illinois with the Win With Wellness program and helping our listeners with some good thoughts and insights and advice on other population health type programs that they can run in their rural communities. It's a great contribution. You're making a great contribution to rural health. And I want to thank all the rest of you for listening in today. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please go to iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or whatever your favorite podcast app might be and subscribe to Rural Health Leadership Radio. And if you'd like to leave a rating or a review in iTunes, you can go to our website, www.rhlradio.com, and click on the iTunes link. And to continue the conversation on leadership and rural health, you can join our LinkedIn group called Rural Health Leadership Radio. So until next week, let's keep working to improve healthcare in rural America.
If you would like to connect with today's guest, please send an email with your contact information to bill@billoxier.com. If you would like to be a guest or suggest someone else as a guest, have a question you would like to ask, or simply want to contact Rural Health Leadership Radio, please use that same email address, bill@billoxier.com. That's bill@billaxier.com. You can also visit our website at www.rhlradio.com.
And we'd ask that you please support our sponsor, the Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health. The Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health's mission is to improve rural health one leader at a time.